Test 1, 2, test 3.
And thing and everything like that. But those guys, the head pushers are ones that are really the most experienced and probably the smartest men we have in the whole camp. Which I only have 5 of them out of 1,000.
And you have, what, 1,170 set working here?
Yeah.
So they start from one side and they work their way into the mm-hmm. middle. Like, in fact, it's like a burn.
Yeah, same thing like a burn. But the thing is, they go according to how the cane is laid. The cane is all laying this way.
Okay.
They cut with it. They do not cut against it.
Right, so you cut with the grain of it. Yeah, the spine. Okay.
So they got here. So this morning, they might line up here.
Okay.
First got group. First group went here, and the next 600. They cut it in half row, depending how they want to do it that day. We got a bunch of cane fields to cut. They put less crews in the field.
Uh-huh.
But they only got one cane, or the unit, the hauling unit's going to come in. Let's say they need cane right away.
Uh-huh.
They'll cut the first 10 rows and call a thing called loadable, and they'll get your first 10 rows down quickly
uh-huh.
where you can load it. Okay. Sometimes you're picking up. When things are tight, sometimes you're picking up in the same field as you go to haul. I mean, they're cutting the same time you're haul loading.
Right, yeah.
So, hey, that's more or less a cut right there. We got, so you see, they're cutting across. They'll finish this block probably around about 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock, and they'll be transferring to the next block.
I see. So how big is a block?
35 acres.
35
acres of actual cane. Now you got 40 acres from canal to canal, which as you see here,
uh-huh.
you see, you got here, but then you got a fire lane on that side, and over here you got all this land here
right.
for this canal. So,
okay.
They're cut up in 640 acres, and then you got, that's a section, and then you got half sections, quarter sections, all the way down. The section is a mile per mile.
Now, could you explain to me again the, I guess, the sort of the hierarchy of cutters? Like, you got lead man.
Yeah, okay, you got your cutters, which your, out of them cutters, let's say we got our fire burners. Fire burners are probably a step between a lead man and a regular cutter. Fire burners have more years, so they're generally a smarter guy, does not know, not scared of fire, is the main thing. And the burners are very important because they got to do a lot of thinking on their own, because when they go down into the middle of the field, you can't see them.
Right.
There's a wind change. They got to realize that and stop, or otherwise they can. You see how close the cane fields are together. They could burn 30, 40 fields before you could stop it with a good wind. So, and then from your burners, you have your ticket riders. Your ticket riders are generally starting. They've been picked out of a group for their intelligence and picked out because they can write good handwriting, good ticket. They carry themselves well. And they're good leaders. You have to have leaders also. That's one of the main qualities. Because these guys look at those guys. They're 50, they're controlled by these 50 guys, 5 guys are controlled by these 2 men.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got, then after that you got your lead man, which is he's over the ticket rider, and he's responsible for his crew. Responsible for any bad work or anything. And then every unit, we generally have 4 crews per unit, which is 200 something men, 220 men. You got 1 head pusher. The head pusher is a guy that's probably been with the company, just on the average. All mine have been here more than 10 years, or I got some guys up to 25 years, started with the company as a cutter in 62, and they're still here with us as a head pusher. Now, his job is not as strenuous. He's got a lot of pressure. It's more of a supervision job. It's more pressure on him to get the work done. He don't have to really, he does a lot of walking. Doing any strenuous work, but he is the guy in charge of the cut. And then there, from very, very few of them, select few of those head pushers can become a camp superintendent. Now, the camp superintendent I have now has never been, he cut cane maybe twice, but he's just, I think 2 times, but he's totally different. He's a very, very intelligent man, very intelligent. You know, Jamaica has very, they got a lot of very smart people there, and he's one of the top in the country. He's very good. Very good with men, very good with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my other Belle Glade camp, he was a head pusher for, at least 25 years. He started as a cane cutter. So that's the story of success right there with him. His name Mr. McDonald down in Belle Glade. Now, he started as a cane cutter at Osceola, Okalana. I know here at U.S. Sugar. Went to Okalana, went to Osceola as a cane cutter. At Osceola, he never changed again. And slowly increased his status until he became a camp superintendent. Now, he's reached his plateau. I don't think he's about 60 years old. There's not much more he can go after that.
Yeah.
Unless he would come get a job with the Ministry of Labor in Jamaica or something like that. That's basically the hierarchy in the cutting. I mean, there's that's where everything goes there.
Now, is there a hierarchy in the mill as well?
Well, the mill goes by seniority, by union labor. Union laws give you the bump and roll thing, and that's just a big, big complicated procedure, but that's by years, you get seniority. By seniority, you can bid for jobs, and by ability, you can bid for jobs, just like any other union, any other company.
Now, you go down to Jamaica every year. Is it to Jamaica only that you go? And what do you do down there?
When I go to Jamaica now, we go with a Florida fruit and vegetable on a recruiting purposes. We go and see, we replace 40% every year, bring 60% back. Those 40% are, we take the overall, which I think we see more or less about 4,000 people in Jamaica. And I'm recruiting, we're really then going as Florida fruit and vegetable, but as representative of Osceola Farms. Now, we're recruiting for all the mills. We do not recruit for us personally. We have Florida Fruit and Vegetable, it's like two tables and two interviews. Florida Fruit and Vegetable also talks to them, and the growers talk to them. So it's two tables. They got to pass the first one to get to the second one. They got to pass the second one to get in to get their car. Then they got to pass the physical to get home here. But that's how things work there. And we go and we see guys, we talk to them and see how they... what kind of background. We like to have farmers, guys that are used to hardware, because you get guys over here that, let's say they're a waiter, and they all want to come over. You want a waiter over here, he is not likely to cut cane. He's likely to get over here just to get a free ride to jump and get out of here, mm-hmm. because everything's paid for. Mm-hmm. And you want hard workers, because this work is very strenuous. It's not something that you can, that just not anybody can do. And they cut cane in Jamaica, very limited cane, but the ones that do cut, they understand what it's about. Mm-hmm. And that's why we interview. That's why we go interview. Now, they do have a recruiting in Barbados and St. Lucia and Martinique. It's like a little jump tour. You go real fast.
Yeah.
You see all the islands because there's lesser people to see. Like per day in Jamaica, we may interview 900 people.
Really?
And depending, like in the city, we may take 20%. And in the country, we take about a 95, 98% because that's what you're looking for. Basically, that's what we do down there. Now, we try to bring our preferred. We got preferred guys and pre-designated guys that we bring back always. But we try to bring back. We got 60%, so usually the higher earning guys and your guys that are your best cutters, they come back always.
So that would be a preferred cutter.
Yeah, preferred.
Right?
We got
worked with before.
Yeah. He does a good job for me and stuff. I like to have him with us, but we like to keep him. And it's very good to keep a cutter with you as long as you can. If you can keep him... you know, take care of him, keep him, make sure, you know, he likes Osceola Farm. If the worker's happy with you, he's going to be, in turn, he's going to do good for the company.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be changing guys all the time, because then you got to reaccustom people to your company, and you can't switch between companies.
Yeah.
You can, but it's saying U.S. Sugar prices differently than we do, even though they all come out making the same money at the end. You know, everybody is going to make money. The thing is, they have to make money. That's by all the laws we got. They're going to make money.
Yeah.
But... it's different ways of pricing, different monies and stuff like that.
Huh.
So
do that.
We price different. We price on a row basis. U.S. sugar prices on the field from one end to the other.
Huh.
So what a U.S. sugar price may be, my price might be 40, there'd be 80. It might be $80.
Uh-huh.
But they're paying, you know, if the guy was to cut from one end to the other, he would get 82. It's the same deal, just different ways of doing it. It's calling a class half full or half empty. It's the same difference. The basic is our main concern is they come out making they got to make $5.30 an hour. That's their minimum wage, which I don't like. I try to average my men to make, when they end the season, at $6 an hour or more. I'm not going to cut them right at their minimum wage, because then your guys is not going to like that. I mean, they're not going to want to come back. They don't want to say, well, we can get minimum wage. We just can work by the hour. There's no reason to try to push ourselves.
Yeah.
It's a thing of production. You got to, like my old boss and I used to say, you got to give them the opportunity, the carrot in front of them. You got to make them want to go, where if they do go, they're going to make money. If they don't go, they're not going to make money. You got to, it's an incentive thing.
Yeah.
And they will, I make sure they make money. If they're not making money, now I got a budget I have to go by But I will break that budget if the guys aren't making money. See, if my main concern is they make money, that's all our main concern. But it's just, they do good and they do all right. I have no complaints. If I did, I'd have a major stoppage.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
show their voice, their very voices does show their displeasure they give. But you see the ramp there, we're coming kind of past the conveyor U.S. Sugar elevator, they call them.
So this is all U.S. Sugars.
Yeah, we're intertwined.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How do you tell where your fields start and theirs stop?
Well, by maps and just by knowledge, but we have had where they've come burned our field, and we have where they come, we've burned theirs, and they come and cut ours, and we've cut theirs. And
sugar wars.
That doesn't happen. That's worked out. You know, we're one big happy family. We have to get along with each other. We can't go against each other. We'll never get anything accomplished. So they, U.S. Sugar is a very, very good cooperative company, and they help you, and we help them, and because we're really so intertwined, we use a lot of their stuff, they use a lot of our roads, and we use their roads. And like right there, we're hauling there now. We're surrounded completely
by
U.S. Sugar. But U.S. Sugar has land that's surrounded completely by us. It's the same deal. We're really, we hold together. You have your differences sometimes because in life, you'll have a difference, but generally between lower personnel, you know, superintendent, not an upper, you know, presidents of company, stuff like that, they get along real well with.
Okay, a cutter has been hired, they're flown to the United States, they're flown to Miami, they come up here. What happens once they get here?
They get here, we get them, okay, let's say, as when I receive them in the camp, we got to take their United States labor card, get their numbers, their names, register them on a payroll. Because when we get there, we're going to create a payroll. Put them on a payroll. We give them an advance. I think it's $10. Give them $10 advance where they have money when they get here. We also issue them clothing, shoes, boots, hats. Give them all their equipment.
And what's the equipment? It consists of the shin guards?
Shin guards, machetes, files. And that's what they pay for the boots, the pants and the shirts, because they keep that. Right. The knives, I give them the last knife always, just to take home. And but the ones they cut in between, we take back from them. We just store them. But the last knife, I always let them take it. They always take it home and they have it for something. And make the clothes. And then we take it, put them in payroll, get the payroll up. And then generally, depending on what flights, we usually don't start right when they get there. They don't go work the next day, depending how many. We only get 100 and something per flight. We have, when those planes may come for DC-10 or something like that, they come by, 100, 200 people, 230. Maybe only 90 of those are ours, and there might be some U.S. Sugar somewhere there. Until we're at a point, we all schedule this with the coinciding with the start of the crop. Now, we coincide with Florida Fruit and Vegetables, say we're going to start October 20th. We'd like to have at least 80% of men by October 20th. So then they will coordinate their flights to get 80% of their guys here. We start off, and then we can actually be cutting and still receiving men. Those guys are lucky. They don't sit in the camp. They go to work next day. See, so once they get in there, they get in shape, get sent. We give them a physical sometimes, but they usually get two physicals as they come down. They get checked by the doctors as they come to make sure, because sometimes the Jamaican doctors overlook something. And just like with anything, companies, biggest problem now are healthcare plans and workman's comp, and if a guy comes over with a bad back, you don't want him because you have to carry him the whole season. So that's one of the main things we got to look for there. Remind me on the way back, we'll stop and get you some lettuce. I'll just show you the planting now.
So, how many of the cutters that come in know how to cut? And those who don't, how do they learn?
Well, let's say we got 60% know how to cut. The other 40, we can roll the windows up, Mike. Too much noise. The other 40%. Now, some of these guys have cut for other mills, or they have cut in Jamaica. But in Jamaica, they don't burn the cane, so it's a different type of cutting. They pay by ton there. And most of the Caribbean countries pay by ton. They cut and they pile it, but the Caribbean companies do not have to pay, they make, guy may make $1 a day or $2 a day, which is great down there, probably. I don't know. I don't know the exchange rate. It was 5-1 in Jamaica, but they don't have to get, they make a lot more money here compared to what they would make if they were home. So that's the reason they come here. They want to come here and cut. And what was the question? Do you remember?
How do they learn how to cut if they don't know?
Oh, okay.
How?
We have demonstrators. Then we get the older cutters. Now I'm going to assign each crew 3 or 4 demonstrators. Now the first 8 days is a trial period. 8 days, they have 8 days to learn how to cut, to cane properly, pile it, and pick up their stamina and their speed. At the end of the 8 days, then we can start looking for the slower guys. Now we're a production, we have to get production out of these guys. Like in a factory work or anything like that. You have to have production. Now you have these slow guys that they are just not going to cut cane. They're just not suited for this type of job. And usually they end up going AWOL anyway. You have to get breach their contracts and send them home. And you replace them as you breach them. Now, some guys, now that's the extremely slow guys. We've only breached maybe, out of 1,000 guys, we've breached 20, 25.
And how do you breach the contract? You just,
well, it's in the contract they sign it. They have, they know that they, if they do not come up to the minimum wage, and after checked out 3 consecutive days, checkout is the way we discipline them. Bad work, it's a little piece of paper. If they do bad work, we got a checkout slip. The checkout slip it tells you what they did wrong. Like if a guy didn't cut the cane right, or he left high stubbles, or did dirty work, they can get checked out. Usually they're warned 3 or 4 times before they get this paper. They have to get 3 of these papers to breach a contract. Same thing is like it works in our union. You're in the same way. You get 3 disciplinary forms and you're out. Same thing. It's termination of employment. And we don't breach that many for that. And the slow, we moved 20, 25 out this year, like I said. Slow cutters, they get warned. They still have to receive 3 papers, you know, and they have to be extremely slow. I mean, I got the thing that I think guys, if a guy's making, their minimum wage is $5.30, and everybody else in the crew is making $6, and this guy's only making 3 something, well, this guy's slow. I mean, just naturally.
So the demonstrators, what do? Do they take them down?
Yeah, demonstrators, they'll go walk behind them and they see the guy. There's ways of cutting cane. Lost my pair of steering. There are ways of going. See, guys, you can't wrestle the cane. You got to cut the cane with the gun and flow the cane. You can't, you say, it's a rhythm. You see a good cutter, he gets a rhythm. He doesn't try to bash the cane down. He doesn't try to cut all the stalks at one time. If it's depending, each cane is harder or softer. It's different, the different diameters and stuff. And the old cutter knows that. He knows how to line up and how to manage a cane, they call it. Manage it, grabbing it right and not wrestling against him, getting yourself tired, needlessly tired for no reason. There's different ways of doing that.
So the demonstrator would show the guy the basic motion you make with the machete.
Yeah, they give him help and how to cut. You know, some of the guys never cut with a knife before. Uh-huh. He can tell him how to cut where he won't get hurt. And this is very important because these knives do hurt and they do amputate anything they touch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a matter of 1 foot out, 1 foot back.
Like that, that's gone, yeah. And they have the shin guards, you know, uh-huh. And the boots with steel toes. Some of them like steel toes, some of them don't. And they're not good. Our injuries, really right now, most of our injuries are getting to be eyes and backs. Eyes because you always have some leaf stand stuff, and you can wear glasses and protective glasses, and we've tried everything. Our company has tried more than most other companies on eye protection. But the problem with the eye protection is that it fogs up. You haven't developed something that has not fogged up, and when it fogs up, it limits vision, and then they go ahead, it's worse. So these guys, we've curtailed them by better supervision and trying to keep the guy, but an accident is just what it is, an accident. It's very hard to find how you're going to get a piece of a little leaf that's not going to get in his eye. Now, we don't lose the eyes that much. It just usually just leaves cutting the outside or cutting something like that. That's very costly injury. That's something which, not costly to the man and costly to the company. Now, we could eliminate that as something that would be tremendous, but it's something that's going to be very hard to do until they come up with something that doesn't fog up and give you good vision.
So this demonstrator, who's an older cutter, is basically, they apprenticed to him for 8 days.
Yeah. Sometimes one. I keep doing more sometimes. Let me check this belt. Belt's no longer with us. So.
Oh, really?
We have to rough it. The one that's planting of which Mexicans, not Jamaicans. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's what the thing you were telling me before, that the Jamaicans do, the West Indians are primarily the cutters, the burners.
Yeah, they're certified. That's the only jobs they're certified by the H2 program. The United States government certifies it for two jobs. Well, really one job, and burning is included in that. It's a gray area, but they don't. It's dealing with the operation of cutting and burning. Now, it doesn't don't tell you can't burn. It doesn't tell you can burn. It's like a gray area. So these guys, you know, why go and get somebody else when you can use these guys?
Yeah.
We could. Now, we could get somebody else and pay them $3.65 at our minimum wage and do them burn the cane. But we pay these guys at $5.30 and still make them cane. We're not gaining nothing by doing this. It's just a convenience of having the guys there and you have to be moving them around or stuff like that. But they can, like I said, cut cane and burn. That's the only two jobs the H2 will let us have, because they say anything else will be taking jobs away from the American cutters. American workers. There's no such thing, almost no such thing as American cutters, but American workers. And that's, now the planning is done by the Mexicans that we bring over. We don't bring them. They show up. A lot of them, like, you know, they come over, a lot of illegal aliens. You saw the Geraldo Rivera thing, see how they come over and like that all the time. So a lot of them end up here in Texas. Where the tomatoes are up in, I think, Ohio or something like that.
Jersey.
They end up mainly here, and between all the country. Now they pass these new alien laws, and when a guy comes to you with a document, with a name, an official I-95 number, you can't, you're not an expert on that. Now that's where we just take his thing. If he's got the proper ID, we got to put him work. We don't know that's not his name. Now you got an idea, but you're not going to go, that's not your problem. That's the United States government's problem. They come to us, the guy gave us, he falsified documents, he bought documents with a dead person, they do all sorts of things. And that's the problem now. Now they're coming down hard on us, on the Mexicans, or coming down on us, on everybody, on all the companies. That's going to be the problem now. If when they curtail this labor, the Mexican labor, who are we going to plant with? Now, the jobs market, everybody's becoming more educated. The American blacks used to drive the tractors for us and stuff. They're becoming more educated, don't want to do this job. They're becoming, trying other jobs. The education system's getting a lot better, more free opportunity, everybody doing things. But that's the problems we're getting. I see something in the future that we're going to run out of labor. We're slowly running out of labor because American workers, they want to do something else. They want to work at a higher, maybe $10 an hour job instead of $7 and get here. Like you can see, most of our workers are old guys. We're old guys. We've been with us 15, 20 years. We're running out of laborers. And the ones you get now are the ones that you last a week with. They're rockheads. They burn up. All they want to do is get enough money to buy them a few more little rocks, and that's about it.
Now, how did you get involved in all of this?
I guess it's in my blood. My dad, when he came over, he was a rancher in Cuba. We had a ranch over in Camaway. I wasn't over there. I was born in Connecticut. But after Castro took over and threw all the people in his party out, one day my parents were there, and a guy came in a truck, the Jeep, and the gun, says, "You have to go. You either become one of the Communist Party, you have to go. They will shoot you, put you in political prison, whatever it is." And my parents left, they'll leave everything, froze their assets, all their money. We were pretty well off back over there. About a 10,000 acre ranch, something like that. And leave them, let's go. My dad came over here, worked in a Remington Arms factory in Bridgeport, Connecticut, with five kids and his wife, four kids, and me. I was born over in Bridgeport. Then he came over, somehow we got down in South Bay, and he worked in the petroleum, then from petroleum, I mean, driving truck. Then he came out here in Osceola. Like my boss also, driving tractors. That's their, they started there. Now they went from, you know, playing cards with the president of Cuba to driving tractors over here in America. Well, that they had to make their money. They had a lot of kids to feed. They did that, and slowly my dad worked his way up to where now he's an assistant general manager of a grower. over here. So he's, in turn, he's made, I admire him a lot because he's made two lives, really. He lost a life over there at 35 and came over here and made another life for another 20 years. So, and that, from there, I've always been out here with him. He'd go burn, like, when they used to haul cane here, I wasn't there, hardly never seen my dad. He'd leave at 5 in the morning and probably get back at 12 o'clock at night, then go back at 5 in the morning. Cane hauling was a lot different back then. They hauled all nighttime hours. It's a lot different. It's not as easy as it is now. It's pretty easy compared to what it was back then. A lot of technology's changed the things. The grounds are better. It used to be a lot wetter grounds, and the irrigation and pumps have helped us out there. So I used to come out with them all the time and come out here and ride on top of the loaders and chase rabbits and stuff. And I've always been around it in the summertime when I'd work out here checking. I was a grower part. I never went into harvesting that much. It was a grower part, you know, checking the worms and checking the different diseases hit the cane and different. Going with him and helping him estimate the cane, learning from him a lot. And then the one I was at Palm Beach Junior for about a year and a half, and then I got this job offer out here, which is a cut foreman, it's the lowest job here. And I started working here with another guy, you know, Mr. Lamar and Victor. They both showed me a lot. Plus, I took it in easy because that's part of my. It was easy for me. Everything here was easy for me.
Now, what year was that?
It was 1980. So then from 80. I moved up to assistant superintendent. Moved up from there to there now in 6 years. But just, I like it. It's a job that you gotta like. It's a lot of hours, 15 hours, 16 hours a day. I get up at 5 in the morning, every morning, 7 days a week. Can't watch football games, can't watch nothing, which you go, and I'll leave here tonight, probably 8:30, 9 o'clock. There's a lot of strenuous work, called mental work. You gotta remember a lot of things. You have 5 units you got to look at, and you constantly have problems.
Yeah.
This is a very fast-paced thing. Fast-paced. You're moving around a lot, so you always have a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Is it problems with problems with everything from the wind to
billions of problems? Yeah. I mean, the problems from personnel problems to truck driver problems to burning problems to personal problems that people have. You know, as the year goes along, you have more personnel problems.
Right.
The guys get edgy.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of variables that can really, the mill, that's a problem. Everything's a problem.
So as a superintendent, you're a superintendent of what?
I'm superintendent Victor's a Sylvester superintendent in charge of hauling, trucking, hauling, cutting, and the whole thing. I'm his assistant and I cover the whole thing also. We cover from the burning, cutting, hauling, to right to the mill. Plus 1,000 other things when it gets thrown on top of us, you know. Because since we have all the personnel, we have to take the slack of the mill once I'm done. We usually have to do it for them and stuff. But that's basically our problem there.
Yeah.
Is getting the cane to the mill. This is a planting here. You see, so it's a drop planting method. This is the Cubans introduced this. The Cuban planter has a plant in Cuba that way.
Uh-huh.
U.S. Sugar used to cut by billet method, which they take a loader. And they pick it up, and it's mechanical, it shoots. And the little wagons have conveyors, and they put little pieces out. But they found out this is a much better method because you're not handling the cane as much.
Yeah, right.
And the less you hand it, the better it's going to grow.
This person drops it in.
Yeah, they drop it. See, they drop two canes, and they overlap them. And they got a guy, the guy in the back is chopping the canes where they won't stand up because some of your canes are crooked. They got to lie flat down, so he's chopping.
Yeah, I see. Can I take a picture of that?
Sure.
Okay.
The reason I'm being...
So you'll use hand cutters far more than...
We'll use hand cutters as long as they're available to us. And economically feasible to use, unless they put a price that you can't use, because we are a business. A business is always going to do what they can do. Well, it don't cost them a lot of money. Now, the machine doesn't cost that much money, but
yeah.
What the effects of the machine cost you money. Plus, you know, My personal opinion is just, I think it's better giving Jamaican workers money to improve their income. Now, I don't know, I think we put about $20-$40 million in their economy every year. And I think that helps us instead of us having to, give them an aid anyway. You know? They're working for it. They're prouder of it. I tell you, if you go to Jamaica, the cutters are the ones that live the best. They have the best houses. They have real nice houses. Every time we go there, we always go and eat one cutter's house or something like that. And they have real nice houses. The whole family comes over, and they're the higher of the community. I mean, the upper class. We're not upper middle class, yeah. I'd say. And it's something else. And you gotta understand what they live in.
Oh yeah.
People, have you ever been to Mexico and places like that? Now you live here in the United States, you look at it the other way. Well, everybody's got houses here. You know? Guy doesn't eat one day, it's starvation. Now we do have people that starve. I know that, but yeah, you go to these guys maybe not eat for a week. They gotta find food. They get up every morning, they go sleep in and watch cartoons, they're not gonna eat. Yeah. It's not like you can go to the supermarket. I've been going over there for 3 years now. And I'll go over to the supermarket. I like to get in and go up there into the villages and walk around and talk to people each house and get to know them, because it helps. These guys are different mentality than American workers, and you gotta understand them to deal with them. So I get in there and talk with them and have a few beers with them, and you get in the bars, the neighborhood, but not the disco or things like that. You get into the neighborhood bars, which, like in England, you have each neighborhood has a little pub. And you get in there, and after the guys get off work, you go in there and you start talking with them and talking about different things. And you get to know them. And these guys really appreciate coming over here. It's a big thing for them. Now, these guys, every one of them, get me over here. You know, but it's a political thing. For them to get to the recruiting site, they gotta be with a justice, they're like, let's say a mayor. Let's call it JP, justice or something. I don't know exactly what they call him. And he's got to give them a card for them to get into the thing. Now, if you're not in that guy's party or you're not having, that guy doesn't like you, he's not going to give you the card. It's very political how they get that done there. That's nothing to do with the United States government, nothing to do with us, nothing to do with anybody. That's the own Ministry of Labor of Jamaica, or Ministry of Labor of Barbados, or whatever ministry, whatever island we're going to. And that's how it happens out there. Then they come to us, and then we select for them guys. So we tell them just how many people we want to see. But they, going over there, you can see how they live. It's a battle to live over there. They're getting a lot of overpopulation. And food supply there is not as plentiful. It could be. It's a poorly run country. The administration there, they got Siaga there now, but they've had a fight between communism and democracy, and you got neighborhoods, you go in there and there'll be JOP American, they got democratic block, and then you go to the communist block, and you can't, you know, you get caught in there and you get problems in there. There used to be a lot of times they go down there, these recruiters have had to jump by and lay down and stuff because of machine gun fire and stuff. And that's during the change of the governments. Now this year I could get the luck to go down there, and I think there's gonna be a change of the government. I think they're going from back to communism. I think Manley may get elected again, which, well, that's good. Then you got to renegotiate everything. It's a big problem, and you always got different. But both parties know this is very vital to the country. They will never stop the H2. It's too vital to them. It's a very major source of income. They're very big on bauxite down there. Kaiser Aluminum is a big company. Alcoa is a big company down there. And the only problem they don't like down there is that they're very British, and the British is very union, and they may have a lot of, you know, they have like 40 different unions in the island of Jamaica. And that's 125 miles by I think 50 wide or 90 wide, which maybe 40% of that could be a livable area. You know, you got Kingston, Montego Bay, and Ocho Rios, and the rest of it's scattered. Mandeville, that's about it. And they got 40 unions, you know, and there's strike every day. It's kind of funny when you got, there's a strike every day. Lights go off, electric company striking. Water's not working, so water company striking. So, it's pretty, you gotta go down there and really see how they live. And I've been in their supermarket, I get in their supermarket, you go in there, and you go in Winn-Dixie, and you know, rows of food and everything. You go there, and you're just lucky to find what the truck have dropping by that day. You know, the meats, you only want to know that. We got an open air market we go to. You want a piece of pig? Well, they kill the pig in front of you, and they cut you a piece of pig. No refrigeration. They can't.
That's right.
Yeah. They can't do anything about that. So that's the problem there.
What are the labor camps made up of here? You can have dormitory living as well as...
Our labor camps are very fairly old. We're building the process. I think we're going to build a couple new ones next year. But they're a dormitory type. Uh-huh. We've got three different individual buildings. They're two stories. They have rooms, dormitory type rooms with showers, more like a locker room. You know, you got a bunch of different showers. They individual, by law, we're going to have individual shower stalls, but it's the one big bathroom. You know, and everything. They got, the only thing people get when they ride is the privacy, but the guys know that when they're coming over. If they come over here to work, they don't, you know, it's a bunch of guys living in the room. They get along. We have problems, and you got to mix it right. It's a very touchy situation.
Yeah, how do you figure that out?
Well, that's his camp supervisor. He knows. Huh. That's why you need a very good camp supervisor. You know, you're dealing with 1,000 different personalities, and not everybody can live with everybody. So you got to move them around, assign different beds, and you know, work things out. He's got a big job on him just running the camp. The camp's very vital too, the food and everything else. But it's that's your heart, is the camp, for everything. Well, if the camp is a good, well-run camp, you have no problems. You keep the men happy in the camp. Yeah, and no problem whatsoever. Everything runs hunky dory, fine. You are a poorly run camp, you start getting problems in the field.
Just reading about the camps and the
buildings. It's like a big dorm, like an army barracks. Now, you got U.S. Sugar. They run theirs as 250 men buildings. We have buildings that house maybe 300, 400, depending on how modern they are. But they're very, very, I mean, we get inspections maybe once a month from all different type of health department. This time we have to pass. I mean, there's a leaky faucet. We got to fix it. I'm not exaggerating. That's how strenuous they are on us. And plus all the publicity, you get checked from federal, you get county, you got local. Oh, they busted my windshield out before that. Something else. Buzzards. They weigh about 30 pounds. You hit one with your cards. They'll destroy your car, believe me. But I got no gas. We'll go to the camp.
Sure. You used to work here after school, didn't you?
Yeah.
What did you do then?
Oh, whenever I could get out of here, I'd work. This is my father, plowing, disking fields, anything. He used to give me the worst jobs to teach me all about it.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. He used to give me the first job I ever had out here was breaking big rocks into little rocks. Wrapping around the culverts. Making little, where to prevent erosion around the culverts. So you put rocks, make a little, and get rocks about that size and break them down to smaller rocks. But first, you get them out of the field, developing land. So I've done everything from surveying to running backhoes, running, disking. I've never been able to cut cane. I haven't cut cane yet.
Got him?
Nah, I've played with him before, just got a little bit. Just to show him I can do it.
How many Americans were working for you this year? There weren't that many.
I started with eight.
Eight?
Cutting seed cane. Uh-huh. And they lasted about a week. And giving them every chance in the world. Now, I didn't breach them. They left themselves. I do not breach American workers. That's my personal thing. Now, I'm supposed to as a company. Well, I'm supposed to do it. We're looking for production. But I'm trying. I don't like the rap we're getting that we're not giving these guys a chance. I'm giving them more of a chance. I like to have American cutters. I'd rather be having them here where we do all the welfare programs we're doing and goes elsewhere. You know, the people that need it, people that aren't eating. You know, here, people are just so lazy. They have kids just to make money, and then they let the kids in the street. I worked down in Fifth Street, down there, this old grocery store for a year, after college, working there before I got this job. I worked there for a year, and I learned their lifestyle very well. So I'm not going to sell you hearsay. I'm what I actually see. And they have kids just to get more money. And those kids never see that money. The kids very, very, very rarely see that money. That money goes to their mother, and they buy their Colorados or whatever. And you go to a typical USAVE or typical Winn-Dixie. Just go in there and just sit around for a while. Just watch. how they come in. Now, you got certain things you can buy with food stamps, certain things you can't. Now, the things you can buy with food stamps, like a lady comes up in an Eldorado or a Mercedes or something, a $20,000-$30,000 car, gets out, buys a basket full of whatever beets and things you can buy with food stamp, pulls up the other cart, the beers and liquors and stuff she can't buy, and pays it, pulls out $100 bills and starts paying it. And you, it doesn't, and that's not what the system is made for, you know. And I understand the government just don't have enough, they don't have enough people, they can't check all that, there's no way. And there's a black market on food stamps. I mean, you get there's an 80 cent return on it, I think $1 to 80 cents right now. They sell the food stamp for money. And there's, you know, they're crazy. Any way you make a buck, there's gonna be a way of doing it anyway. I mean, I'm just not pointing at Beltway, but you know, we got a lot of abuse of different programs there. Sugar built, Blue Sugar built things with a lot of foresight. They're really, with a lot of foresight. They knew a lot. Plus, these are newer camps. They got already, well, our camps will be like this now. We're going to model, not exactly like that. See, U.S. Sugar's, like me, I'd have to live here. I'd have to live in one of these buildings. Uh-huh. One of these houses. Uh-huh. You know, and that's something that I wouldn't do. I just would not, I could not do that. I'm not going to live in the same place I work. But, you know, they get their housing paid for and stuff. It's great, but you know, I'd rather live somewhere else. Most of that, now, that's their foreman's. Now, I would have to live wherever I want because their superintendent can live wherever they want. But their foreman's have to live in those houses. And as the houses go, those front line, your lowest foreman gets the littlest house, and the next one a little bit bigger, next one a little bit bigger. Yeah. The plantation supervisor gets the biggest house. And it's just a matter of, you know, when this guy moves up. It's not promotion, but it's more like dying off. As they die off, you go. It's a rough way of putting it, but when they retire, you move up. You move houses, and that's the status of Sugar, but that's their company, that's the way they work. A little bit different. Their camps are smaller, which is a great idea. That's really good. Now these camps we got, we do not own these camps. Camps are owned by Royals. By Royals. So when we started, we were a very small mill with no money. So we had to find a place to house. Royals had these camps.
Royal?
Yeah, it's Larry Royal, the owner of Royals Lunches and stuff. Now we lease these camps from them, but we are. Anyway, we're the owners. No, we're the ones that control them camps. We're responsible for everything in them. So they just own the buildings. We lease it from him. He makes money. And we do most of the maintenance work, and he does a little bit. It's like a landlord, right? We take care of most of everything since we got the ability to do all that. Now, we're now in the process of building smaller camps like U.S. Sugar. We're going to start building different camps to get out of this barrack situation, which is, it's not a bad situation, but like you say, you have so many men living in one area. Which it's just, you know, problems can occur a lot quicker. When you have the men separated, now it's locked in. U.S. Sugar is the only company that has the small barracks. The Oklahoma has the bigger buildings just like these. That's them over there. See that building? That gray one?
Okay. Yeah.
Because
they're dotted all over the place.
Yeah. Well, you in the co-op's got the same type. Now, it's not a bad, nothing bad about it, you know. There's not many men in there. We probably walked in the middle, walked to one. I don't know. Let me see what Lawton says. That's what Camp. Boyd Lawton is our camp superintendent. I had to explain to him who you are first. Because the reason everybody's scared, these guys want to protect their job. They know if they get a. If something happens, they're not going to have to be the. They don't have a job no more. Yeah, you know, when you get a television and news crew pulling out there, and you're not going to talk too much.